Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us this time here at Storm Champ, the podcast where we speak with individual folks about their stories and struggles and their ability to rise above it all. Today, we're talking with Leo Zavala, one of our good friends from a couple of different networks we share. And we're just really excited to dig in and get to know a little bit more about you and about some of the lessons life has sort of led you to learn. So thanks so much, Leo.
Thank you so much for having me. What up, everyone?
Let's go ahead and just open it up a little bit. If you could tell us about yourself, a little bit about what you do and how this fall is starting off for you, 3 days in.
Yeah, so I work in higher education. I work with pretty much in diversity and inclusion at a university, and really like my work, like my job. Every day is unique. I see myself as sort of like a problem solver. So I usually jump right into to the work on a daily basis. So, but yeah, I've been in higher education for like over 15 years, similar roles. And so it's really been a lifelong learning experience along the way. Very rewarding. So very appreciative of where I'm at.
Absolutely. And obviously, maybe starting out at the beginning, you didn't quite know where you were headed or what your job title or position would lead you to. So how do you face the work that you do every single day with so much strength and resilience?
Ooh, how much? Wow. I guess, you know, I get up and I'm like, you know, who can I help today? Like, who can I assist in this work? You know, I think I always try to think about my purpose every day, and really thinking about, you know, who's going to come in my door and how am I going to really assist them with the energy, right? I really want to try to give off that energy that you're in a good place and this is a good place for us to help you, and we want to help you get to the next level. Mm-hmm. And how can I, you know, not be someone that gets in the way, but is sort of like that coach and that champion that helps motivate them. I think that energy comes from deep that you'll learn more about as we go through this this whole podcast here. You'll kind of get a feeling from where that daily sort of light just kind of comes from. It comes from a lot of different places. But yeah, I'll share a little bit more about that in a little later on.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into it then a little bit. Okay. So we've heard your name. We've heard a little bit about what you do and a little bit how you start your day or face your day every single day. But tell us a little more about who you are beyond your work and beyond your family. How does that outside world sort of relate to your uniqueness and the gifts that you give?
How does the outside world relate to me? You know, I got a little funny story. I'm going to try to say it and, you know, keep it within the time frames. But, you know, as I think back to me as a little kid, you know, I was I think I gave my parents really a challenge, you know. I was this kid. I was born very pigeon-toed when I was a kid. So mm-hmm. I had to have these braces put on my legs. And, you know, there's photos of me with these braces. And it was really like, you know, me trying to run everywhere with these things on. And then when the braces got off, I was always jumping off stuff. So there was like these old stairs in the house, and I would like just take these leaps and just, you know, like fall and try to get back up. And so, you know, it was just something that I was always sort of just taking risks and out there. And, you know, and I was always surrounded by people that, you know, cared for me and loved me as well. And, you know, where I come from is Grand Rapids, Michigan. And my mom's side of the family has like 13 siblings. My dad, like four. Everybody has a nickname. So growing up, my nickname was Tony Baloney Eats Macaroni, right?
Right.
That was like my name. Like I went to kindergarten, and you know, we're sitting around in the circle, and the teacher's like, okay, everyone, what's your name? And I was like, Tony Baloney Eats Macaroni. So the teacher picked me up, took me to the phone, like took me to the office, got on the phone and called my mom. And I can remember the call just like yesterday. My mom's like, you know, the teacher's like, hey, we have a young little kid here that thinks his name's Tony Baloney. So my mom, you know, she gave me the phone, and I could hear my mom was like, your name's not Tony Baloney, it's Tony. And so, you know, everybody in Grand Rapids pretty much knows me by Tony, all my family. But from that day forward, you know, nobody ever uttered those words again, and none of my uncles or aunts or anything. So the way that I relate to the world is really by all the people that have impacted me throughout my lifetime. And, you know, from all the uncles and aunts, and everybody was so unique and brought, I'm a flavor of all of that, you know? So I'm this big bowl of what I would probably say, you know, like Puerto Rican rice with a whole bunch of different spices in it. And, you know, it's just like, it just hits you in the mouth. But I'm also a problem solver. I know I'm a fighter, not in the sense where I'm, you know, out there, you know, trying to fight people, but just a fighter for things that, you know, that are right. You know, in terms of just helping people, not that I have this sort of like, this is right. I think I'm a deep thinker. I'm a connector. Certainly I'm a motivator. I see myself as an innovator and a coach in the sense that I try to support people through their challenges. And I think I thrive probably most in very challenging situations. That's just where I thrive. And I'm also very laid back and reflective. And I got a funny sense of humor, but you know, a lot of people don't get it, but that's okay.
That's all right. That's okay. I mean, yeah. You definitely shared several factors of what you kind of carry with you throughout your day and throughout your work, and different influences, I suppose, from a young age and growing up and into who you are now, that really made a difference. So when you think back to, I don't know, a younger Tony Baloney or maybe a couple years thereafter, do you recognize the person? Do you think that younger Leo would have seen the Leo who sits in front of us today? And what would he think about this guy?
Right, right. I know we're jumping across different names, Tony, Leo, you know. But, you know, I think, you know, the younger me, you know, that's a very interesting question. And I think my 16-year-old self was dealing with a lot. And I think he would probably remember the look in my eyes, and that look from dealing with just a lot of different things. And so, I think it's like that stare that I had in terms of just, you know, staring down fear in a lot of cases in my life. So I think he would recognize that look in me. I was probably, you know, at that time, I was also very into like sports and football and all of that too. Uh-huh. So I don't think the younger me would recognize me in this academic setting, right? Mm-hmm. With all of this schooling. I think my 16-year-old self knew I wanted more out of life for sure than where I was at that time. But I think my younger self would have never anticipated me being where I am right now.
How do you feel about where you're at right now? When you think about everything you've gone through and what life has thrown your way, what sort of comes to mind in terms of that reflective space?
Wow. So you're like, how do I feel about where I'm at right now?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting, in the sense that I felt like I've lived two lives, not simultaneously, we're living two different lives, but like just have seen quite a few things in my rather short term in life. Mm-hmm. And gosh, that's an interesting question. And like, I think I'm getting to a place where I'm sort of becoming more content, more in stride. I think for a long period of time, I was like, always felt like I was rushed, always felt like I needed to be somewhere and, you know, rush to the next meeting. And now I think I'm like making, you know, taking my time, you know, being more thoughtful, being more present in the daily tasks that I have going on versus just, you know, rush. So, yeah.
That takes a lot of time and experience. I'm sure the younger you would be like, whoa, go, let's go. What's next, right? Like, what's happening? I mean, whether that was last month or last year or a decade ago, we all kind of get into our stride. And I'm happy to hear that, man. That's awesome. It takes a lot to get there. So congrats on that work. I know it's been rough. So when you think about some things, I know that there's got to be all sorts of little storms that pop up in the world that you live in, diversity and inclusion on a campus in this country at this time and all sorts of things, but also in your personal life. I mean, there's probably no shortage of storms we could pull from. Being that our, entire podcast is about Storm Champ, is there one or two or a particular storm you'd like to kind of explain a little bit more about, go in depth a little bit more about, and kind of provide us a little bit of how you got to be older and wiser, as some might say?
Wow. I mean, there's quite a few storms that I can definitely think of, for sure. Let's see here. I think I'll start with, I was about 16, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. I was in the gym lifting weights, and I was like, getting ready for my senior year of football, and, lifted weights. I wanted to, ultimately my goal was like to be a running back somewhere, running back at a university or a college or, somewhere. I wanted to play football after. Not that I was exceptionally good or was being, looked at, but it was like a goal of mine, to kind of continue to get better. So I'm in this gym, I'm lifting weights, and I'm getting ready for my senior year. And as I was lifting this weight, my left arm gave out, and I was like, dang, man. Like I felt like I pulled a muscle. Mm-hmm. And so waited about a couple of weeks, and I was like, dang, this isn't getting better, putting stuff on it to maybe ease the muscle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this isn't getting better. And so I go to the doctors, and the doctors, my mom takes me to the doctors, and I'm sitting there, and they're like, yeah, you got a strained muscle. And I was like, okay, cool. So went back home, it just felt horrible. And
had you been injured before in athletics? Like, what an athletic injury feels like. Kind of that you have to give yourself some rest to bounce back. Is it something that you were familiar with, or were you like, was this one of the first times you had to pause in stride with what you were trying to achieve?
Yeah, this one was like, I really had to pause. This wasn't like I could continue to do what I was doing. This one like stopped me cold in my tracks. And I was like, whoa. The second, when I came back from the doctors, I started, my shoulder was, it was getting all red. It felt more swollen. And then I started throwing up. And so I went back to the doctors, and then they were like, ran some other tests. And then they said, immediately we got to check you into the hospital. And so I went to the hospital. They did these more tests, and, they thought it was like an infection in my shoulder. And so, cause my shoulder was getting bigger, my left shoulder was getting bigger. So they, put these needles in there and tried to see if they could get fluid, and time is passing. And, I'm like, what's going on? And
that's
all
scary.
This time,
yeah. That's really scary. That's a lot of stuff for what you thought was just a muscle strain or something. Right.
Yeah. Cause I'm like, so what's up? But I think by this time my parents already knew what was up, but at that time they wouldn't share with me. So there was some discussions behind closed doors that I wasn't privy to. What really shook me a little bit is a lot of family was coming in to visit, and I was like, it's like a full muscle, it's good to see you. Like, it's all good.
I'm not scouted yet. The coach didn't say I was on the team. Like, come on, guys, just give me some time, right? Like, it's okay, right?
I know. I was like, no, what's going on here? Yeah, I was like, hey. So, So they eventually would tell me that I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And so, you know, I was like, okay, so, you know, what's that? You know, and at that time I didn't know what stages were or any of that. So I was sort of like, you know, okay, so, you know, what's next? And they were like, well, there's a lot of next here. And the first thing is we need to take you to Chicago. And so, I had an IV on me at this time. And I remember this like yesterday, Kim. I remember getting on the train and taking the train to Chicago to go to one of the most world-renowned pediatric hematology oncology clinics and work with one of the, which was one of the leading specialists in limb salvage programs for individuals that had cases of cancer that were as bad as mine. I learned that later. But so I went to this, you know, was on the train with the IV all bandaged up, me and my mom. We get to the end of the train station. We take a cab to the hospital. As soon as we get there, they push us into this conference room, and we have all these doctors around us. And they slowly tell me what is going to happen. And I think I was still sort of like, what's the word? Like when you're not. You're there, but it really doesn't hit you. Mm-hmm. Like it's like you're in denial, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in denial of what's all going on at this time, and you know, they said they're going to walk me through how many rounds of chemotherapy I'm going to need, radiation treatment, and I was like, okay, that sounds great, but I had no reference point. Like I don't,
sure.
It was. This wasn't like, you know, somebody was going to, you know, walk me through how this was going to happen. Basically, you lay in the bed. They have all these tubes full of different types of chemicals, and they just pump them one after the next in your body. And it, in many ways, you know, you get really sick. And it's in some ways like the movies, you just vomit. And then at the same time, I was going through radiation treatment, too, to shrink the tumor in my left arm. Wow. And you know, went from 180 to like 130 in terms of weight, lost all my hair. That's when I realized you really do need eyelashes.
Oh, man. I'm not wearing mascara today. And that's not a fair comparison by any means. But, okay, eyelashes. Yeah, that's kind of a big deal.
You need eyelashes because dust in the air, you just take it for granted. But when you don't have eyelashes, you're, like, blinking forever. And you're, like, eyes are constantly watering. But had a biopsy on my shoulder. They found out what stage it was in. It was in stage 4. I was young enough to be able to go through the high doses of chemotherapy and radiation in the hopes of actually saving my left arm, and pretty much bedridden there in the hospital as I went through all of that.
How long was that process?
It felt like a year I was in that hospital, but I think it was like maybe several months in Chicago before they had it up under control where I could come back to Grand Rapids and have the rest of my treatment there in Grand Rapids. So
did your family, anybody from your family stay with you while you were in Chicago, or did they have to go back to life up here?
Yo, my mom is, you know, a saint, you know, like she laid in that little futon, little chair that they have next to your bed. She was there like day and night, there with me, you know, just holding me through it. And, there was times where she couldn't, you know, she had to do her thing too. She was a single mom at that time, caring for, there was 5 of us, but pretty much four of us were still at home.
Yeah.
And so she lost her job being there. So that was a challenge, but she was there the whole time. And I remember, I remember just, you know, being there and seeing and being in all that mess. And I got to a point where I was so bedridden there that eventually I had to get up and I needed a walker. So for a long period of time, you know, I needed assisted walking. And, you know, it was manageable after a while in terms of the chemotherapy and the radiation, to a point where I didn't get used to it, but the doses, I think, were coming down not as strong enough where I could begin to manage the in-between treatments times. Yeah. So that was Chicago. And I'm really trying to gloss over a lot of it. There's still a lot of details in there, a lot of things that happened. But that was a storm. That was a heavy storm. Eventually was in Grand Rapids, continued my treatment there. And one of the things that during this whole time, one of the things that I've kept thinking about is, like, I don't want to go back and have to do my senior year again. Like, I didn't want to have to go back, be held back, not to do my senior year again, but held back and not graduate with all my friends, you know? And so I had
grown up with them. Yeah, you'd grown up with the same guys, you know, you'd played sports with them all your life. Grand Rapids is a medium small town, in my opinion, right? So, like, they knew you, they grew up with you the entire time. And it's a big deal to all grad to get through high school, first of all, and to be at the place to be able to graduate. So I could see, you know, at any age, but especially those younger years, wanting to be with your peers, your cohort, and the fear of not being able to do that probably sucked a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of my friends, they wrote cards, they did videos, and they, like, sent me all of these cards. You know, one cool thing I'd like to do down the road is, like, because I still keep all of the cards, I still have all the cards and all the letters that everybody wrote me. And I would like to you know, go back and talk with each one of them about the card that they wrote for me, you know, and just say thank you to them. But, you know, that's a project for another day. But I remember, like, it was yesterday, being in Grand Rapids, and there's a big hospital right downtown. It's on a hill. Everybody knows the hospital, but it's a children's hospital. And I got a chance to really meet some really cool nurses and doctors there as well. And that helped me through a lot of what I was dealing with at that time. you know, and I want to say a disclaimer first too, that I hope that people don't do this, because I don't think it's something that folks should do. But you know, I wanted to get back to high school and I wanted to finish. And at that time, the only way that I saw possible was, eventually, I was driving to the hospital to get my chemotherapy treatments. And then after my chemotherapy treatments, you're supposed to get checked out. And so what I would do is tell the nurses and doctors that my parents were downstairs, and I would actually go get in my car and drive to school.
You're so stubborn.
You know, and I was like, because, you know, really, I didn't want to stay in school another year. I wanted to get a job. I wanted to be able to help my mom, you know, but I'm also dealing with this chemo and this radiation. Like, it was just a mess. But I you know, I was like, I got to find a way to do this. And I'd be at school, I'd be throwing up in the student bathrooms. My senior picture has my bandana on my head. It's not funny. I mean, a lot of people struggle with this stuff. But in looking back for me, it really was... you know, like, you know, I was a teenager. That was my rabble rousing. That was, like, how I was sort of, like, you know, fighting back, trying to take control of my life in the midst of this great storm, right? Because sometimes in these storms, it feels like, you know, like you don't have control. And for me, it was like, what can I get control of? What can my goal be to at least distract me from all of this other stuff that was going around, Kim? And, you know, I wouldn't advise it and folks to do that, but that's just what I did. And, you know, I managed to, the days that I couldn't go to school after treatment, I would go home and the school would send a homebound teacher. But you know, I did end up graduating, but here's another cool story too. I mean, so my, and I don't want to get one of my coaches in trouble, but it was like the last game of the season, right? And I had been the honorary coach for the football team, right? You're in all the pictures, right? You don't get to put a suit up. You're just sitting there. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to play that whole senior year, and I couldn't, you know? So every game for me was just, like, very emotional, very just difficult. And I'm even getting, you know, choked up remembering it. But the last game of the season, you know, I'm in the locker room, and, you know, I go ask the coach if I could just at least suit up, you know, and I didn't have, you know, I didn't get all of my equipment was at home. And so a lot of the teammates begin to find some equipment in the locker room, and shoulder pads and knee pads and cleats and, you know, and the helmet, and the helmet was too big, you know. It was just like everything was just barely sticking on me because I had lost so much weight. Mm-hmm. And he let me suit up, and he let me go up on the field, you know, like running with the team. And, you know, that was probably, you know, that coach was just, you know, just a man. He's an overall great guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the game clock, right? Watching the clock click down, and I'm like, dang, wouldn't it be cool to get in this game, you know, like just for a couple of minutes, you know? And, you know, the coach, the teammates went over to the coach, and they must have said something to him. And he's like, Savala, get up. And I was like, what? And so it was like probably 5 seconds on the clock of the game, the last home game of the season. And he's like, go in. And he grabs my face mask, and he says, you better not hit anybody. Just go in there and you know, just get in your position and not hit anybody. I had a portacath in me, which was something that gives you additional, you like increases your blood flow so you can have more chemo and like get administered medication. It was like an implant underneath in my chest. And you know, I was really nervous about going in, but I went in, and you know what I did? I hit somebody.
Like, you hit somebody?
Yeah.
Of course. Like, everybody's fingers are crossed on the sideline, and you're over here just reckless. Just trying, like, it's, if I'm going down, I'm going down doing what I love, like, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, you know? And again, you know, a teenager, you know, just somebody just, you know, like
the joy that must have been pulsing through your heart at that time, right? Just like the smile on your face, just putting your feet on the field, I'm sure. I can only imagine.
Yeah, smelling the grass and just just being there, you know, I was just like in awe, you know, and you know, working on a book that details all of this as well. But awesome. You know, that was a storm. I mean, that was a storm, and I think, you know, I'm not getting into all the details before that, but, you know, I was raised in a single parent family household, like I said, you know, and it was my mom and five of us. And, you know, I was an angry kid too, you know, I was a really angry young person. And so when that happened to me and all that, you know, when that storm hit, I was just really like pissed at the world. Like, I was like, man, y'all, you know, like, You know, why now? Why me? Why this situation? It was a lot of whys, you know, but and looking back now, you know, a bit more reflective on whys and all of that. But
Leo, we're just so glad you're here with us. I'm so glad you're able to share your story. You've gotten to a place where you can laugh about some of that stuff. I mean, I'm sure that there are some hard memories, obviously, that you still go through and you still hold close, But yeah, just, you know, for a million reasons, just thanks for opening up and sharing and being a little vulnerable with your story on that. Amazing. I'm glad you're here, man. I'm so glad you're here.
Absolutely. Me too.
What do you credit to the process of kind of getting out of the darkness in regards to, that's a massive, massive example of a storm, but, and I'm sure it wasn't just overnight where you got to a place of peace in regards to a lot of those details, but can you think of any tools or anything that you utilize to kind of get to a closer to that place of peace, to be able to sort of feel grateful for what you have now on the other side?
You know, when a storm hits, you know, usually decimates everything, you know, and you got things everywhere, right? So you got pieces everywhere, you know, and you just gotta begin to pick up each piece, you know, and just put one step in front of the other. And it is sometimes very painful. There's a lot of, you know, like I said, there was a lot of anger, a lot of frustration. I think for me, there was a lot of hope. There were a number of people that I could pull on to that helped me, because I am where I'm at, not because, you know, I did it by myself. No, there's a lot of people that helped me along the way to get here. And, you know, I remember that, and I want to, you know, stay humble with that.
Yeah.
But to get to a place of peace, after all of that, cultivating some sense of gratitude, I think the first thing that I had to do was just forgiveness. Like, just forgive people, forgive. And I'm glossing over a lot of different things, but I had to forgive a lot of people. And I had to take some ownership for my issues. And that wasn't easy. That was not easy. All of this took years and decades of support and help. But I can remember a very vivid time where I forgave a person that gave me a lot of challenges in my life, and when I forgave them, that really changed my outlook, because I stopped running on, and this was in probably my early 20s, and when I reached that, maybe closer to early 30s, but when that forgiveness came, it was like anger was my, my battery. It was my, it supercharged me, kept me going. And when I let that anger and led with forgiveness, I had to find a new place to power me. And it was really through you know, just thankfulness, being humble, being in a place of just like trying to find a place of content, you know. But it really took a while to look inward. And I think I was afraid of looking inward for a long time. So, you know, I placed a lot of blame on that. But when I began to look at where that fear and where that anger came from, it really opened my eyes a lot.
If you could sort of give that person, whether that was your teenage years, your 20s, your 30s, whatnot, whatever, you could give that younger person a word of advice, what would be something now that you stand on this side of everything? What would you say to them? What would you encourage them in starting that hard process of looking inward, finding peace, forgiveness, etc.? Is there anything that you would do to sort of provide some sort of direction in, or advice in that regard?
That's hard. You know, that's a really difficult thing, because me telling my younger self, I probably would have been like, you know, whatever, you know, you all in your little cushy job, or you all, you know, got your little life. So you don't know nothing about me. But I think I would tell myself, you know, you're uniquely you. And don't let life's challenges change you. And it'd be like, go marinate on that, you know, specifically, because I think sometimes we get hit so hard in these storms, and we let those circumstances try to define who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're more than those circumstances.
Absolutely. Sounds so wise, Leo. <You're> so I mean, I think you got some learning to do, don't we all? But shoot,
yeah.
You definitely have some gems to share with the younger folks and your peers alike. So out of everything, you know, and this is one example of a storm that I think it may resonate with some of our viewers and our listeners, and it might completely blow them away as well. But is there any silver linings in the process that you can kind of look back and say, damn, I'm met? Although I would never, ever, ever choose to go through any of that again, is there any silver linings that you've gleaned from the experience?
From that? From just in life in general, or just that experience alone?
Both. Why not?
Okay, so I would probably say gosh. Be cautious about student loans. No. Think twice. What is the silver lining in all of that? Oh, geez. Man, I think there's so much. I'll try to make it really, really quick, but I think I think on a daily basis, or maybe on a yearly basis, you know, we all deal with storms, right? So take the first storm as it comes, you know, but sometimes, you know, you got these like multiple storms coming at you at one time, you know, and just take one at a time, you know, because if you try to take them all on at once, it's just really, it's a challenge, you know? So try to just deal with the one to get you back on your feet, and then, you know, move through the others as much as possible. But gosh, I mean, the silver lining in it all, for me, on the other side of like all of that experience, mm-hmm. is, you know, I'm here in a place being able to do what I love, to help people. And for me, it's like, how do I use that experience to help people? But I also try to be very careful not to measure people's storms equally. Mm-hmm. So the storm I might go through and the storm that others might go through, it's a storm, you know? And I always try not to equate that, you know, and to treat each person's storm equally, you know, and as much as possible. And so so the silver lining for me is like just remembering that and being humble about mine, and also being supportive of where others might be at. And so I think I have a lens now to help be a bit more empathetic about what people are dealing with. And so for me, it's like that's the silver lining is being in a space where I can be empathetic and help and like say, you got, you know, you're in it, but let me tell you, when you get on the other side, you know, it's, you know, it might, you know, it's going to be better. It's going to get better. You know, it might get a little worse, but, you know, stay in there, you know. And I definitely see myself as a coach in that regard.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Leo. Well, thanks so much. Any final thoughts that you want to leave with our listeners, our viewers today in regards to resilience and persistence, perspective, reflection, any of it? I mean, it seems like you probably have a lot to say. Not the time.
Tell us
what we need to know.
You know, we can do this. I mean, we can go on for an hour if you want, but I think I want all the viewers to know, you know, to in dealing with your storm, you know, write about it. Sing about it, paint about it, dance about it, you know, work out about it, you know, talk to a therapist about it, you know, get those feelings out, you know. And I think whatever it takes for you to sort of like get that expression down. And you know, again, I don't want people to compare struggles, you know, please don't do that. And I think every struggle is unique. And I want folks to just take it day by day, and you know, that's pretty much, you know, the gist of what I want to convey to them. You know, like, I'm out here rooting for you, you know, I want to hear your story too. So let's hear your story. Let's hear how you weathered through the storm and, you know, how you managed to just pick yourself up and keep going, you know? But yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thanks, Leo, for joining us today on Storm Champ. We'll be sure to post this episode to our website, stormchamp.com, so folks can download it and share it on their social media as they see fit. And until next time, y'all, we'll talk to you soon.
Take it easy.